We have somebody I just never had a chance to introduce before, and I like this guy. This guy is so much fun. Alton Garrison is, I've heard him speak before. He's a great speaker. He's the assistant general superintendent. But all that's information's in your book. When you turn to page 7, you see all that. It's all right there. But I want to dig a little deeper, find out a little bit more about him. So I did some digging on the internet, and I couldn't find any dirt, but I found some good stuff. There's some questions and stuff that were in there, and I looked at some of these questions, and one of the things I was looking at was, what was your biggest pet peeve as a leader? Lack a sequential process. If the process is flawed, the product will be flawed. That is a true statement. And I believe that the Royal Rangers have been going through a process that is a correct process. Then I'm looking through here and it says, what are the goals do you have as a leader? He says, I am praying to finish well. Man, you know what? That's something we all should be considering. We need to finish well. It doesn't matter what age you are, where you are in your spiritual journey. The important thing is finishing well. And I can definitely let you know that I think Alton Garrison is finishing well. Not that he's going to finish soon, but Alton Garrison is somebody who has dedicated himself to finishing well. Alton, would you please come and share with these gentlemen? Let's hear it.
Thank you, Steve. God bless you. Good morning. Man, it's great to be alive. Wasn't it great last night? And Doug Clay did a phenomenal job, and it was just a wonderful evening. And the food wasn't bad. Sometimes food's bad, but they had some empty seats at our table and a lot of dessert. We got a long day ahead of us, so I'm glad to be on the front end of it. I start with you this morning, and tonight I end about 50 miles away at a men's conference, and we're eating, it's called the Wildlife Wild Game Dinner. So y'all pray for me, because I don't know if that means roaches, possum, or venison. I haven't figured that out. You have your notes, and in a minute I'm going to get to them. And we have some sessions that we have designed around a teaching done by John Maxwell, a friend of mine, with 5 levels of leadership. Now I'll handle 2 of them, and the other speakers will handle a couple, and we'll kind of move through that. But before I get started today, I know it's the way we're setting it may be a little difficult, but I want you to connect with and turn either to your right or left. I want everybody to have one buddy, because I'm going to have to talk to them and interact with them. So if wait a minute, you got to pick the one that you're going to stay with through this whole session. And so if the right one is taken, you got to go to the left. And if there's only one of you there, you got to go to the back. And if you're by yourself, how many's got their buddy? 2 people. God bless you. This may have been a mistake. No. I will tell you what we're going to do, and your buddy's going to ask you a question in a minute, and then you're going to tell him an answer and all this kind of stuff. But you need to have a buddy through this whole morning. Secondly, I want to read something to you that is kind of overarching problem that we have in the United States, okay? Not just in the Assemblies of God, but in the United States. There's a book that was released some months ago called Unchristian. And Dave Kinnaman, who is the president of Barna Research, wrote this book. And after extensive study, let me just read to you his observation. In virtually every study we conduct, representing thousands of interviews every year, born-again Christians fail to display much attitudinal or behavioral evidence of transformed lives. Now think about that a minute. Born again Christians, he's saying, don't look like and act like that they've changed much toward godliness and away from the flesh nature. For instance, he says, based on our study, we found that most of the lifestyle activities of born-again believers were just as likely, the lifestyle activities of born-again believers, we found that they were just as likely to bet or gamble, visit a pornographic website, take something that did not belong to them or steal, consult a psychic, physically fight or abuse someone, consume enough alcohol to be considered legally drunk, to have used an illegal non-prescription drug, to have said something to someone that was not true, to lie, to have gotten back at someone for something he or she did, and to have said mean things behind another person's back. One study we conducted examined Americans' engagement in some type of sexually inappropriate behavior, including looking at online pornography, viewing sexually explicit magazines or movies, or having an intimate sexual encounter outside of marriage. In all, we found that 30% of born-again Christians admitted to at least one of these activities in the past 30 days, compared with 35% of Americans who didn't classify themselves as believers. So the believers were only 5% better than the non-believers. In statistical and practical terms, this means the two groups are essentially no different than each other. If these groups of people were in separate rooms and you were asked to determine, based on their lifestyle choices alone, which room contained the Christians, you'd be hard-pressed to find much difference. Now, here's what it boils down to. 84% of the people they poll say they personally know at least one committed Christian. Yet, just 15% thought the lifestyles of those Christ followers were significantly different from the norm. Now, gentlemen, if that doesn't point to the fact that your ministry position is not only important, it is critical to the future of our church and of our nation. Because you hold in your hands the pliable life and lives of young men who are on the front end of this journey, and we must turn this around. I said, we have to turn it around. We don't have an option. We have to turn it around. Jesus said he's coming for a church, and he uses some terminology, spot or wrinkle. All he's saying is they're going to have to be righteous and ready to go. And so I just want you to understand how significant your role is. But I also will tell you today, it's not always easy. It's not always easy. If it was easy, everybody could do it. Now, here's my scenario. Think about this a minute. You've just been asked by the pastor to become the new Royal Ranger leader in the church. I've got the case study maybe written in there, but let me just talk to you about it. There are just very few boys involved, and there's a very limited budget. That's what he told you. We don't have many boys. We don't have many money, much money. And the pastor says that I don't see how you'll get any volunteers to help you, because every time I ask for volunteers, they disregard me. Then he says, the former Royal Ranger leader is angry at him because he was asked to resign because the pastor found out he had not been faithful to paying his tithe and coming to church. On top of that, there's a youth pastor who is afraid that you're going to recruit teenage boys out of the youth group into the Royal Ranger group. That's the scenario. No budget, very few boys, angry former Royal Ranger leader, not a real supportive pastor, and potential conflict with the youth department. God bless you. So here's your assignment for the next 3 minutes. You get 3 minutes to do this. Now, it probably take longer than that to work this out, but I don't have time for that. So here's some thoughts, because you're going to talk to your buddy, and you're going to come up with three things you do, the first three things you'd do to resolve this issue. But let me frame it. What would be your relationship with the former leader? How would you repair that? What would you do? Where would you go with him? If the former leader resented you accepting the position that he felt was rightfully his, how would you heal that breach? How would you recruit helpers? How would you repair the relationship with the youth pastor? And how would you get the group to grow and become robust and vibrant? Just a small challenge in this morning, and you got 3 minutes. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to find out from your buddy. I want y'all to come up with three things. Now, you don't have to fix the whole thing, but what would be the first three things you'd do to resolve that issue in that context? Talk it over with your buddy. 3 minutes. Okay. Now, you may not have solved the whole issue, but these are kinds of situations that occur all the time in leadership. Now, there's a lot of testosterone in this room. Well, I look around and maybe not so much. A lot of white hair. Hey, come on, give me a break. And the nature of man is to power up. We've been given a title, we've been given a position, and the nature is to power up. Bless God, they gave me this job, I'm going to do it, and all these other people need to fall in line, and I tell you what, we're all about command and control, and we got this thing settled, and if they don't like it, they can hit the highway, it's my way. Yeah, get her done. I mean, that's our normal way. It is counterintuitive to our base nature to perform like a true disciple of Jesus Christ. If they slap you on one cheek, give them the other. That's not what we want to do. Bow! That's what we want to do. Let me show you how you can get over the top. I brought a video. Maybe some of you have seen it, because y'all have seen a lot of videos as Royal Rangers directors. But this one shows you the inappropriate way of causing the conflict to go away in an office setting. Watch this.
When we asked Reebok to send us Terry Tate, some people thought we were crazy. But I'm a firm believer in paradigm breaking, outside the box thinking.
Hey, buddy.
It was over 15 minutes ago, Mitch!
And since Terry's been with us, our productivity has gone up 46%. We're getting more from our employees than ever before.
You know you need a cover sheet on your TPS reports, Richard! That ain't new, baby!
Hey, Richard.
Hey, Janice!
But what's really impressed me is how Terry's become part of the Felcher family. He fits right in here.
That's a long distance call, Doug!
To be honest, I wish Reebok sent us 10 Terry Tates.
You want to play game scene? Well, when it's game time, it's pay time, baby! Whoa!
Okay, so if that's not the right way, what is the correct way? So open up your books. We're going to fill in some blanks. Now, before I get into the actual the journey we want to take, I want to give you some just what I call generalized statements about leadership. And they could frame the discussion not only through my session, but through Doug's and also Bob's. Let's look at them. The root causes of leadership failure always lie in a destructive interaction between the situation with its opportunities and pitfalls and the individual leaders with their strengths and vulnerabilities. There's always tension, and you've got the situation, and then you've got our competency. If you do not have the skill set to resolve it, or if you don't have the patience to walk through it, or if you decide to take the Terry Tate approach, chances are you'll crash and burn. Number two, there are systematic methods that leaders can employ to lessen the likelihood of failure. So some of the things that I'm going to talk about today are not unique just to Alton Garrison. They have some universal applications. I can't know every situation in this room, but you can extrapolate the theory or the process or something about it into your own situation. And that's what I'm going to ask you to be thinking about. How does this apply to me in my setting? Number three, the overriding goal in leadership is to build momentum by creating virtuous cycles that build credibility and by avoiding getting caught in vicious cycles that damage credibility. Now, I was a district superintendent for 4 years. That's not a lifetime, but it's enough to realize a very important principle that's pretty disappointing in church life. I found out, I know it's going to come as shock to you, I found out that just because people speak in tongues does not necessarily make them sweet. I just found that out. I'm sorry to tell you that. I mediated several church fights. I mean, conflicts. I mean, disagreements. No, I mean fights. I walked into one church on Super Bowl Sunday afternoon. The place was packed. That's not a good sign. When the revival service is packed, that's a good sign. When the business meeting is packed, not a good sign. I was already ticked off because I was missing a Super Bowl. Well, I'm just being honest. Okay? And both sides, when I got there, thought they were right. Both sides were praying and speaking in tongues. All I'm saying is, how do we minimize those cycles that destroy our credibility or damage our ability to fix stuff? And how do we enhance those cycles that make things better? Now, I have to tell you that I never mediated a church conflict in 4 years that originated over doctrine. Now, I know they do exist. There are church conflicts that started over doctrinal issues. Every one I mediated was over preference. I want what I want because it's right for me, and you can't stop me from having it. That's sad in the Christian community. But we've already seen that the Christian community, this wasn't just the Assemblies of God, this was the evangelical church world that I read about a moment ago, that many times their lifestyle does not match their confession. So we got to narrow that gap. Number four, these are just overarching leadership principles that you got to keep in mind. Establish personal boundaries. Now, what I mean by that, we're talking about how can you increase your leadership skill, but some of us are just not wired to do everything. So learn what you can and cannot do. If you are totally unqualified and can't develop or be coached into it, say no. Just say no. And we'll maybe talk about that a little later. Number five, defer commitment. Now, let me explain what I meant. That doesn't mean you're not supposed to be committed. But in this context, what I'm saying, grandiose declarations can easily result in failure. What I'm talking about is under-promise, over-perform. We're going to have 62 boys by next Thursday. Well, how many did you have last week? Three. You know, wouldn't it be better to say we're going to have 10 next Thursday and get goals that you could reach, perhaps? Death is a terrible testimony. Sometimes people want us to answer everything right now. If the answer has to be yes immediately, many times my answer is no. If you'll give me time to think about it and process it, I might make the answer yes. Number six, and he said it a moment ago, Steve did, when he dug into wherever he got that stuff. Focus on process. Focus on process. I already said it. He read it to you. If the process is flawed, the product will be flawed. Number seven, go to the balcony. Go to the balcony. Now, what in the world do you mean by that, Alton? It means that you just climb up a little higher so you can get a broader perspective. Many people don't see the bigger picture, and so they don't have all of the information. Now, when I first became senior pastor in North Little Rock, Arkansas. Well, it was a miracle that I actually became pastor. Because if you'd have been on the church board, I don't know if you would have chosen me. I was an evangelist 18 years, never pastored. So there's a lot of stuff that I didn't know about. I mean, just stuff you got to know as a pastor. Now, I'm 39 years old, so I chronologically should have known stuff. But at 39, after 18 years of ministry, I had never dedicated a baby. I had never baptized a believer. I had never formed the agenda and written a funeral. I had spoken and eulogized people, but I had never been in responsibility for it. I'd only performed one wedding. I don't know if it counted because it was out in a park. I know it didn't last. So some of the process I didn't do very well at, like premarital counseling and stuff. So that's the kind of experience I took into the situation. There were three groups. Now, they had an interesting situation. My predecessor had only been pastor 12 months, and he had had a problem and left. He didn't have a moral problem. He just, conflict, just didn't work out. His predecessor was there 36 months. That didn't work out. His predecessor was there 60 months. So you go from 5 years to 3 years to 1 year, and now they're asking me. It doesn't sound like there's a lot of job security at that church. Plus, I'm leaving 18 years of something that I loved and appreciated and felt secure in to go to something that I had no clue what was going to happen. There were three groups, one for me, one against me, and one for another person in the church. And you're talking about digging stuff up, Steve. Somebody had dug up the fact that when I was in my youth, as a youth camp speaker, I had actually played the piano with my foot. Now, I don't really do that. It's just an old Jerry Lee Lewis trick where you put your foot up there and just bang. Back then, I could get my foot up there. Today, it's a moot point. Unless you got a real little piano. Now, I know you can't believe this, but this became an issue in the congregation. We don't want a pastor that plays the piano with his feet. I was elected. Not a strong vote. Most people wouldn't have taken it. But, you know, I didn't have any options. There's not many churches standing in line to have a pastor. Well, I didn't even know if I wanted to be one, but I felt God was leading me, so, I don't want to go into all that. But. It was pretty uncertain times, what I'm trying to say. Those ought to be fun transitions. You ever notice that fun transitions, new level, new devil? So I was elected. And so I said to Johanna, I don't really know what to do. I know what to preach, and I know how to have altar services, and we need to do that. But, like, what do you do on Tuesday afternoon? Thursday morning, 8 o'clock, what happens then? Plus, how am I going to get all these fractured people going in the same direction? Because thing that had caused the last two guys to lose their position was because of a church building issue. One bought new property that the crowd didn't want, and so it passed by one vote, and he didn't make it. Then my predecessor didn't like the property they bought, and so he spent time looking for a new property, and that didn't go over well with the people who liked the old. You understand, church doesn't always make sense. It's just there. So they came to me and they said, did you come to build us a new church? Well, I'm not all that smart, but I certainly don't have the spirit of stupid resigning on me. I mean, think about it. If it costs the previous two guys their pastorate, I'm not going to talk about church building. Plus, I'm an evangelist. I never built a birdcage. I don't know anything about building a church. I missed my Royal Ranger training. But But somehow I got in my mind, and if it was God, praise him. I'm not saying I'm that smart, but I got in my mind that if I could get them to like me, I mean really get them to like me, I'd stand a much better chance of surviving. Because I got the feeling that some of the other guys, there's a lot of people just didn't like them. Now, stay with me a minute. I know in Jesus we're supposed to love everybody. But we can say we love them, but not really want to go to coffee with them. You know. The second thing, I thought, if I could find high visibility projects that were non-controversial, maybe they would look at what was happening instead of remembering that I played the piano with my foot. Now, I know this is a simplistic approach, but that's the way I started. So Johanna likes to clean stuff. She's very detailed, and she's oriented to that. So she started out, she got her two senior retired guys. I call them the Gold Dust Twins. Sam was one of them, and he would get his buddy. And they went through that church like Sherman through Atlanta. They cleaned stuff up. They painted stuff. They fixed up stuff. If you really want to make a hit in a new church, work on the nursery or the ladies' bathroom. Either one of those, you always get great kudos. So Amos and Sam, that's their real names, Amos and Sam. They worked with her, and so then I decided I like to raise money. That was kind of a gift I had. So first thing I did, I bought a new van, raised all the money for the youth group. Then a few weeks later, I don't remember the sequence, I bought a new sound system, raised the money for it. Then I raised the money for a people mover for the senior citizens. Then, well, I didn't raise the money for the piano. A lady passed away and she gave it in her estate, but we weren't praying for everybody to die, but that one did work out. So we got a new piano. You're not taping this, are you? I mean, Obama got in trouble last night, and I don't know. I don't want to do that today. So we got cleaner church. We got new stuff. You see what I'm saying? People started having good services. People started crying around the altar. The crowd started coming in. So now we go to two services. In 2 years, we have added 300 or 400 people and all this. And they kept saying, did you come to build church? No, I don't. We got to fill this one first. I don't know anything about building church. Within 3 years, well, actually 2 years, a little into the second year, people were begging me to build a church. And the deal about the piano player was over. Now, there's some principles there that I want to talk about. Because there are sequential steps that I didn't know about then. I mean, I just kind of backed into them. And I'm just trusting that the Holy Spirit helped me. But I felt like if I could just get people to like me, and I don't mean in a manipulative way. Do you know what I'm talking about? Just and then if I could get some results. That's what high visibility projects that were non-controversial. Then I would be moving forward. Well, then Maxwell comes along, he writes a book on it. And makes a lot of money, and I thought, well, I had the first two steps of that down. I just didn't have the other three. I could have written 20% of the book. He didn't give me any royalty at all. Plus, I can't even claim any of it. It's just I accidentally stepped into something that we're going to study today. Is that all right? So if you're wanting to improve your leadership skill, or if you want to ameliorate or diminish some of the conflict around the ministry, and maybe you don't have any, and if you don't, and you're just top of the mountain, everything's going good, you got all the money you need, and everybody's backed out, and everybody's supporting you, and you don't have anybody that has criticized you ever, and your kids think you're God, and your wife thinks you're the greatest thing since sliced bread, God bless you. Is there anybody here like that? God bless that one liar back there. So if we're going to take that journey, it's kind of like climbing a ladder, okay? It's kind of like stepping up. You got level one, level two, level three. Does that make sense? Let me give you some principles about climbing the ladder. The higher you go, the longer it takes. The higher you go, the longer it takes. You don't become the leader overnight. I don't care what your title is. That doesn't make you the leader. We'll discuss that in a minute, okay? Number two, principle. The higher you go, the higher the level of commitment. People will be more committed to your values, your agenda, and your vision the higher you are on the leadership ladder. They begin to trust you to make the right decisions. Number three, the higher you go, the easier it is to lead. The higher you go, the easier it is to lead. People trust you. They see you as a person who gets things done. And they enjoy winners. People like to be around winners. The higher you go, the greater your personal growth. The higher you go, the greater your personal growth. Here's another principle. You never leave the previous level each time someone new comes on board. You just start a new level. So you got all these people, and we're going to do five levels before we're done in this teaching. Not everybody's on the same level. It's possible to be at different levels with different people or groups at the same time. You must work to take others with you. Just because you have skill at a certain level, you cannot do all the work yourself. Moses was coming unglued. Jethro said, "You need help." And he got 70 people to come around. And they trained them. Delegation. Now, it's not the nature of man to turn loose. It's the nature of man to go, "I am King Kong. If you want it done right, I'm the man." That's our nature. But in the kingdom principle, the more people you have working, the more effective you are. You got to take others with you. There is a danger associated with skipping levels or trying to skip. You just can't do it. And I'll flesh that out as we go along, okay? So those are the overarching principles. We've set up the journey. Now let's begin. Five levels of leadership. Level number one, lowest level, is the position level. The position level. That's where your rights are dictated to you by your job description. So your influence does not extend beyond your job description. At the positional level, which is the lowest level, your security is based on your title. Now that's not very good. That's the way a lot of people think. Leadership is a role, not a title. You can study leadership on the elementary playground. A little boy runs out there and he says, "Hey, let's all go play catch." And nobody gets their glove. He's not the leader. Little guy runs out and says, "Hey, let's play catch." And 20 guys show up with their glove. He's the leader. You walk into a church, that's my context. Who's the leader? The people watch the leader, and if you watch the people, you can tell who the leader is. Sit around a desk. When someone talks, if everybody defers to that person, that's the leader. The person with the most influence, that's the leader. Now, the positional leader is the is the bottom, and people follow you because they have to. But the longer they stay at that level, the longer you stay at that position level, the higher the turnover rate and the lower the morale of the followers. So actually, you don't want to stay there long. Level two. And we're going to spend our time on this one, the time that remains. It's called the permission level. It's where you begin to establish relationships. People follow you beyond your stated authority. Work is fun. Time, energy, resources are spent on individual needs and desires. It is a wonderful place to be because you're now getting people around you who like you. How do you establish those relationships? We're going to talk about that. You can actually improve your likability quotient. Well, it's just me. I'm just telling you, I'm just like I am. I got this color hair. I got this heritage. And I just let the chips fall where they may. And I'm rude and crude, and that's the way I am. My answer to that is... Lady came to me one day. She's always with an opinion, and it was always negative. I'm not saying that there are not situations in church life where you can push back and tell your opinion, even if it disagrees with the leader's opinion, but there's a proper way to do that. She just kind of spewed stuff all the time. One day I just had my bucket full, and I was just kind of getting on her. She said, "Well, don't you want me to be honest?" I said, "You know, I prefer you be quiet." Just a thought. Now, I'm no longer a pastor, and you can tell why. Fred Smith said, "Leadership is getting people to work for you when they are not obligated. They follow you because they want to. People don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. Leadership begins with the heart, not the head." You can love people, possess a genuine love for them, love them. Love people more than procedures. Deal wisely with difficult people. So if you want to establish a relationship and you're not good at it, then what do? I don't know that I can turn every jerk into a lovable person, but I know how to improve stuff. I know when I have made a mistake with my wife and I've said something or done something I shouldn't have done. I know how to be quiet sometimes, although it's hard. I know some stuff that I could do. You say, "Well, I can't change who I am. This is just who I am." I'm not asking you for God to rewire you necessarily, but how many believes the Holy Spirit can trump anything? I mean, that's what the fruit of the Spirit is all about. Anybody ever heard of that? I used to tell the staff all the time, everybody can be a jerk but you. We can't be jerks. Because the rank and file people, they can blow up, they can say stuff, they can criticize, they can pop off, and we're supposed to forgive them. A leader says one thing, and they keep it going, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. So how do you do this? How would you improve that permission level? How would you do it? Well, I got some principles that I've been teaching, and I hope will work for you. Likeability. And I'm not trying to get you to manipulate people. This is not about flattery. This is about moving. Likeability is fueled by love. If you don't love the people you're leading, they're going to know it. You got to love these boys. As much of a rascal as they may be, as many times as they disappoint you, as many times as some conflict arises, the thing that drives the men in this room, I'm convinced, is that you truly love boys. And you want to see them become men of God and boys of God. Am I right? Now, I know that there are gradations of levels of that. And sometimes we have problems and sometimes we don't feel like we love people as much. But I'm just telling you, the basic bottom line is we got to love people. We got to love the Lord and then love people. That's exactly what fuels likability. If a dog can smell fear, they always tell you, if your dog comes at you, look them right in the eye. You know, don't. If you're afraid, they know it. How do they know it? They don't have the spirit of discernment. They don't baptize in the spirit. How do they know? They got some kind of innate thing down, and they know if you fear or not. If people know when you don't love them. They know when it's a job. They know when it's something that you are not really into. They feel it. So let's ask God to change us. And then let's take a few of these. It's not just spirit, it's strategy too. So it's spirit. It's not either or, it's both and. Likeability is fueled by love. Now, there's no definition of love that I think that's adequate. But if you look at the historical and the biblical roots of love, you can find some help. So let me give you a definition in your notes. You can fill in the blanks. Love is the accurate estimate and the adequate supply of another person's need. Love is the intentional exploration and discovery of another person's life. Love is the accurate estimate and the adequate supply of another person's need. It's the intentional exploration and discovery of another person's life. Love is the assessment of the interests, desires, and needs of that person. Love is the concerted effort to respond to that assessment in ways the other person will clearly recognize. So, John 3:16 is the greatest verse for all of that. For God so loved the world, He gave His one and only Son, that whoever believes in Him shall not perish, but have eternal life. Everybody believe that? Amen. Let me rephrase it. For God so loved Alton Garrison that He accurately estimated that he was a creep. Now you insert your own name in the blank there. For God so loved, whatever your name is, so God so loved Alton Garrison that He accurately estimated that he was a creep who needed to be reconciled to God and other people. God adequately provided reconciliation of the person in the person of Jesus Christ so that Garrison could live forever. Put your own name in there. Therefore, Garrison knows he's loved. Don't you love that? Put your own name in. Read it to yourself again now. So they talked me into building a church. I mean, I felt like that's what the Lord wanted to do, but it became their idea, not mine. Was everybody happy? Not quite. Mama Greg, the oldest living charter member, First Assembly North Little Rock, called me to her house in her 80s. So frail, she couldn't come to church. Little grandma of Israel, mother of Israel. You ever seen one? They all look the same. Little beehive hairdo, frail. She sat there in a big old chair, big chair, big chair, big arm on the chair, little phone. She didn't know anything about computer, but she had a network. Are y'all getting the picture here now? She had a network. She said, Pastor, I have a question. Are you going to go with those other people over there at that new church, or are you going to stay with us and pastor First Assembly? I said, well, Mama Greg, we're all going. This wasn't my dream. Y'all have owned that property 8 years before I got here. This is something that y'all decided, and I'm just kind of fueling the fire as the new pastor, and we're going along. She said, it's not my church. I knew it would never be my church. The glory resides at 22nd and Franklin as the old address. She said, the glory resides there. Do you understand what's happening now? I'm getting boxed in spiritually really quick. She said, we've worked. Our fingers bled. We sacrificed. We built that church. And that's our church. She said, now if you go over that new church, let me prophesy, she said. Now this is her way of saying it. Ichabod will be writ on the door. That's what she said. Ichabod will be writ on the door. And she's pointing a little finger at me. Now, you don't want to fight with an 80-something-year-old woman who's just pronounced Ichabod on you. Who controlled about 60 or 80 people through a phone network that all of them had the same attitude as her. So what do you do? Well, first thing I did was get out of there because I didn't want to say anything bad that I couldn't live down. So I started praying. That's one thing. You got to pray. Asking God if there's anything in my heart that's not right, get me straight. And then I started trying to build a coalition of people who wasn't going to just be against her, but try to change their mind. So I won't go through all that today because I got another session tomorrow on leading change, and I'll kind of give you the end of the story. And I don't let me forget, Doug, to finish this story because I don't want to leave Mama Greg in that condition because God did a miracle. But let me just tell you, we also did some things. For instance, I played up the fact that there was a new people mover. Now see, what happened at First Assembly is that several people lived around the church. Mama Greg just lived around the corner. Verl Simpson lived across the street. He said, I'm not going wherever y'all go because this is my church, and whoever you sell it to, that's what I'm going to become. If it's a Catholic church, I'm going to become Catholic. That's what he said. And he said some other things that I can't say. The problem that made me mad is that he was really loved Johanna, but he didn't like me much. Loved Johanna and Lizette. And we lived kind of in a rough neighborhood. There was a veterans home there that for mentally challenged people, and a lot of them got out at night and stuff and walked around. And so he always protected Johanna when I was traveling. He had a little cap on and a little gun. He looked like Barney Fife. But he wasn't into church moving, you see what I'm saying? So I'm just saying, these are challenges. So I said, I knew that fear was one of the, and they had a big retirement home, lived right across the street, down around the corner, and so all them walked to church, or if they couldn't, they got care, but just like a block. Then there was another retirement. So, I mean, you know, moving 5 miles to them was like moving across the continent. And so they had fear, and they had all these other issues. So I, when we had the slab poured, here's one thing I did. The slab got poured. I invited 62 of Mama Greg's friends. She couldn't go. She was too frail. But I got 62 of them to go with me on a bus. I brought them out, and I bused them to Furs Cafeteria. Soft food. And I bought them all dinner. And I went around and, you know, by this time I've been there 2 years, so most of them they're warming up to me. I'd eat off the plate, you know, and eat and stuff. We have fun. Then I took all of them out to the new property, and I had the contractor do a chalk mark drawing, just as outline, on the spot as best he could ascertain where their Sunday school class is going to be. And it was called the fellowship class. And it was kind of a church within a church. In fact, when I went there, it was 6 months before the teacher of the fellowship class ever heard me preach. She would go and teach her class and then go home. These are just issues you deal with as a pastor. And a lot of my buddies says, won't you just demand that she come to church? I said, won't you come try that? I know that this is not like running a Royal Ranger ministry, but you may be getting some things, similarities, extrapolate. That's all I'm asking you. And so I took them out there, and I stood them all in the center of that fellowship class that was just chalk-drawed around. And I said, I don't know where the youth are meeting. I don't know where the children are meeting. I'm not even sure where my office is, but I know where you are. You're right in the middle of your class. And you know, we prayed and sang Amazing Grace and all kinds of stuff. All that is just the journey. The journey. Most people, when they find somebody is against them or critical of them, they pull away. Sometimes it's better to draw closer. Well, why can't we go to dinner? Why can't we go to coffee? Why can't we go? Why can't we sit? It's not the nature of the flesh to reach out to people who are struggling with you. It's the nature of flesh to be around people who like you. But if you're going to be a leader, if it was easy, everybody could do it. Am I making any sense at all? You may have to go cross purposes to your own feelings. Not because you want to, but because it's right. And I'll show you a triangle tomorrow morning that'll show you exactly what I'm talking about in pictorial form. I don't have time to do it today, but I'll do it tomorrow. And I will show you how that as leaders, we have more responsibility, more accountability, and we have to limit our options out of love for the ministry, for what God's called us to do. So building relationships requires intentionality. So I'm not saying that you are that you're manipulating people, but you are actually on a journey that is very, very, very prescriptive. Lyman Coleman, who has written a lot about group ministry and small groups and stuff, he says there are four major building blocks to relationships. History giving, affirmation, making a covenant, and I've even actually replaced this maybe with commitment, and dreaming. I won't get to the three today, but I will get to number one, history giving. If love is the accurate estimate and the adequate supply of another person's need, knowledge of that person's history plays a huge part in specifying the format by which that person can recognize loving acts. It is easily seen by looking at how God loves us. One of the reasons God can love Alton Garrison absolutely is that He knows my history absolutely. When you are ministering in a local church and you are the leader, the Royal Ranger leader, and you are struggling to find people to help you and to get a budget and to get ministry and to take all of the conflict out of the room, when you're struggling to do that, how do you establish relationships with people? I'm telling you, most people want to talk about themselves. The way you get somebody's history is be intentional about your questions. Intentional about your questions. Now let me tell you guys, this is not normal for guys. This is counterintuitive to our base nature. When you come home from work and your wife says, "How was your day?" "Fine." "What'd you do?" "Work." "Would you have any problem?" "Nope." We just don't open up much. She's been there by herself all day wanting somebody to talk to. You've already expended your 30,000 words or 15,000, whatever, and she hadn't even used one yet. So she's 30,000 words ahead of you, behind you, excuse me. And you're sitting there wanting to read the paper and watch something on TV or whatever you want to do. That's just... we can blame that on our manhood if we want to. But sometimes we can buck the trend, go uphill. And in church, it's essential. In relationships, it's essential. In marriage, it's essential that we know what makes others tick. Tell me about your spiritual journey. How did you get where you are today? Leading questions. When I travel a lot. I'm always interested when people pick me up at the airport if they're going to tell me all about them or they're going to ask me about me. Not just because I want to tell about me, but it gives me a little insight into them. Now, here's a group of questions that we're going to close today. And I realize that this is really not something you want to do. So I hate to leave you on a negative. But I'm leaving, and Doug will have to get you out of this little funk you'll be in when I get out of here. But there are just questions. Think about this. Now, these are just starters. There may be others. But here you are. How many came, and there's more than one person from your church or your group or your district and that you know? You already know them. Let me see your hand. See, everybody knows somebody here. Everybody knows a lot of people. I do this with church staffs. I do it in district staffs. And you'll be shocked. People that have worked together 20 years don't know very much about each other except the very surface stuff. So what is your greatest joy? What is your greatest challenge? What causes you to pound the table and cry real tears? In other words, what are you passionate about? What would you attempt if you knew you wouldn't fail? I want you to take the final minutes. We've got about 5 or 6 minutes. And I want you to find, we already got a buddy, and I want us to practice. Because if you do it here, it's not nearly as important as if you do it in your context of ministry, wherever you are. Now, you can do it and not sacrifice your manhood. I mean, you can do this. You can do this, guys. I know you can do it. Well, I'm not articulate. I can't talk. I just don't know what to say. I'm afraid, you know, I don't ever open up to anybody. You know, well, get a life. Because I'm telling you, Jesus wants to know everything in your life. And the Holy Ghost is probing your most deep thoughts even as I'm talking. And it's called conviction. You're going to open up to somebody. And if you don't, you'll be like these people I read about when we started. That you claim Christianity, but your lifestyle has never matched your confession. So, practice. Your wife's going to love me because you're going to go home and say some of this stuff. You'll say, honey, I'm just thinking, I have not really ever asked you these questions, and I'd like to talk to you sometime. You got to set the stage. You got to be the right mood. Got to have all this stuff. To know that you practiced on a hairy-legged man or close to you is just going to kill the whole mood. But don't tell them. Now, this is not about the wrong kind of relationship. This is about the God kind of relationship. I'm really setting this up, aren't I? You're loving this. Are you? Somebody going, I'm out of here. I got to go to the bathroom. I'm not into this. Pick one of these questions or two of them or more or something else. Ask them. If you want to just ask them anything, maybe about how did you get saved or your spiritual journey. But I want you to find out something or maybe two or three somethings about your buddy that you didn't know when you sat down here with him. Go. And 9:15, I'll stop you because we have to have a break.